This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. Chris Graham. We're going to talk some VMI baseball in this podcast. Some of you may know that I broadcast VMI baseball games on ESPN, the family of ESPN networks, ESPN3. This past weekend, we debuted on ESPN Plus for the one weekend series review on ESPN Plus this year as VMI swept a three-game series with Western Carolina. And we're back on this weekend again with Furman coming to Lexington. And, you know, we're about halfway through the season. That was a good time to get folks caught up on what's going on behind the scenes with the Keydets. And it's a stretch drive now. Now that we're in the middle of April, middle of the SoCon season, VMI living up to expectations, I would say. I had expectations going into the season that this team could compete for a Southern Conference championship, perhaps play their way into the NCAA tournament. And now from an RPI perspective, no. And really, I don't know that anyone really in the SoCon, as good as the baseball is from an RPI perspective, is an at-large type team. You've got some really good teams in this conference. You look at the RPIs, Mercer at an 83 RPI, Samford at 78, UNCG 97, Wofford 101, and Furman, in fact, the team that VMI plays this weekend at 104, VMI is all the way down at 184. None of those RPIs. Even Samford right now, 9-game winning streak, 10-2, leading the SoCon at 78 RPI, the best RPI in the conference. They're not, you're not going to, if you lose the SoCon tournament, you're not going to get an at-large bid. Even though some of these teams have wins, I mean, VMI's got wins over South Carolina and Virginia. Furman also has a win over South Carolina back in February. You know, you've got some impressive wins up and down the roster there of the teams in the SoCon, just not enough in terms of, getting an at-large bid. But what that says is there's lots of good baseball here between these teams. All these teams I mentioned, Furman's the only one that of the teams I mentioned that has a losing record in conference play. All these other teams are, top of the conference right now. That makes that SoCon tournament next month in Greenville, South Carolina, that much more interesting because there's lots of good baseball teams, lots of players that Major League Scouts will be looking at who, they only have one chance to get into the tournament, and that's to win the SoCon tournament. So from that perspective, things really get fun, really get interesting as we break things down here. At this stage, what that means then is when you're talking about the 2018 season, where it is right now and heading into Greenville next month, about a month away now, you want to win. You want to have some momentum. Playing for seeding in a tournament, it's a double elimination tournament. Really, you're just trying to play out of the 8-9 game, which VMI fell into last year. And I don't think even mathematically possible they could fall into that again this year, unless I guess the whole season fell out from under them from here on out. But what you're playing for is more about that momentum, getting your guys the number of at-bats they need, getting the innings they need, but not having too many innings from your pitchers, especially your starting pitchers, especially your weekend pitchers, and also developing your staff. Because, in college baseball, for those who are listening who maybe don't follow college baseball that closely but are just interested, or you do and you still are looking for that insight, in college baseball, the regular season plays differently than any postseason. In regular season, you play one or two midweek games. This last week, VMI played two midweek games. This week, just the one. Then you play on the weekend. You play your conference games at the stage of that season. The first few weeks of the season, you play some non-conference games. You still play Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then, late March, you start moving to conference play. You play Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you have what are called your weekend starters. Your Friday night starter is your number one guy. Your Saturday guy is your number two guy. Your Sunday guy is usually your number three guy. You may have a guy assigned to be your midweek guy. You may not. You may just do a staff day midweek. VMI actually has Kyle Statz has been the midweek. Kyle Statz and actually Brandon Barbary was the midweek guy last week, and he actually took a shutout into the ninth inning in the surprise win at VCU, 4-1 win at the Diamond last week over VCU. So, when it comes to postseason play, your conference tournament, at least in the SoCon, and a lot of conferences, the ACC doesn't do it this way anymore, but in the SoCon, it's still just a traditional double elimination tournament. You know, you win, you play in the winner's bracket, you lose, you follow the loser's bracket, you lose one more, you're done. And what that does then is it really tests if unless you win straight through, you know, you're not going to play just three games. And I think even in the SoCon with nine teams, you have to still win four games, I believe, to win the to be able to win the whole thing. So that tests the depth of your pitching staff. And so, you know, so from this point on, you want to make sure again your weekend guys are set. You know, you got those guys, you know, rolling, and then you have to still develop another starter or two, or your staff days in a double elimination tournament really become challenging. In a conference then again where there's only one team that's going to play in the NCAA tournament, and you want to be that one team. And there's a lot of stacked teams here. I mentioned Samford, the nine-game winning streak, 10-2 in SoCon play. VMI finishes up on the road at Samford next month, at least to finish up the regular season. UNCG, VMI took 1-3 down in Greensboro back in March. UNCG 7-2 in conference play, had the weekend off in conference play, played a non-conference series this past weekend, 26-9 overall for UNCG. Wofford at 6-3 in SoCon play, 25-12 overall. Mercer 26-12 overall, 6-6 in SoCon play. VMI actually ahead of Mercer in the standings right now, at 7-5 in SoCon play, 18-17 overall. And I mentioned Furman, the opponent this weekend, 3-6 in SoCon. Surprisingly, 3-6 in SoCon, 17-19 overall, and at 104 RPI, which stands out to me. I know RPI is a factor of lots of things. I was a little surprised looking at just the one marquee win over South Carolina. Lots of marquee losses, you know, lots of losses to Clemson and NC State and ACC games. But just that one win that stands out, that one single win over South Carolina back in late February. So that's where things stand. VMI, you know, is coming off that three-game sweep and actually has won, what would that be, four of their last five the last four, because the win over VCU, then the three-game sweep, so a four-game winning streak for VMI heading into tomorrow night. I'm recording this podcast on Tuesday. Tomorrow night, on the road back in Richmond, this time at the University of Richmond, makeup game from a game that was lost to inclement weather earlier this year. And VMI then returns back home for the weekend series with Furman. Just to signal, and I'll mention this again at the end of the podcast, but we'll have those games. Looks like the weather forecast has been back and forth as far as Sunday goes. Sunday's forecast originally, when I first saw it a couple days ago, had up to a 50% chance of rain, which would mean we would play a doubleheader on Saturday, but now I'm seeing that the rain chance has kind of moved away. In college baseball, different than in Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball, they say you're playing it Sunday at 2 o'clock. If it's raining Sunday at 2 o'clock, you knew it 3 days ahead of time was going to do that, you get rained out. But in college baseball, they make every effort to play the games, and so last week we did this, for example. It didn't even end up raining until after what would have been our game time on Sunday, but there was a strong chance of rain, 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms on Sunday. So we played two on Saturday, got the games in, and these guys, because there's no return trips, unlike in the majors. A lot of times in the majors, you get a chance to, you know, either if it's a division rival, you can just play a doubleheader the next time you're back in town. There's off days built in. They'll fly the team back in for the one game. You don't do that in college. Your weekend in Lexington, if you're Western Carolina like the opponent last weekend, that's your weekend in Lexington. You're not going to come back up the road for a weekend series, for a weekend makeup game. So we got the three games in last week, and VMI got the wins. Start talking about, you know, breaking down the how things are playing for VMI. We'll start with Josh Winder. And he's been a surprise in a not so good way. Winder, a projected, you know, top few rounds pick in the draft. He's a junior right-hander from the Richmond area, 6'5", about 210, 215, big kid, throws hard, fastball in the mid-90s consistently, has all the tools. I mean, you look at some of his numbers, and I'll give you some of his numbers, and then I'll surprise you how much he's been struggling this year. In 52 and a third innings, 60 strikeouts, 13 walks. And these numbers are consistent. I think last year, I'm doing this from memory, but last year he was around 112 strikeouts, 19 or 20 walks. You know, he's consistently 4-1, 5-1, 6-1 in strikeout-to-walk ratio. But this year the problem, a couple of problems, have been number of home runs allowed, 11 home runs allowed in 52 and a third innings. He's given up 15 doubles. I mean, you know, 28 extra base hits overall. He's hit nine batters. Opponents hitting 309 against him. So his earned run average, 5.68. He's just 2-4. This is a guy who was a preseason SoCon Pitcher of the Year. A lot of expectations on him, and there's no injury issues. He's still throwing hard. He's still locating. He's not walking guys. Just the 13 walks and 52 and a third. That's a walk every four innings, about 2.25 per nine innings. So he's hitting his spots. He's just, you know, maybe the issue I've caught a lot of his games the last 3 years as an announcer. I think one issue may be that he's too consistently around the plate. Good problem to have, right? You can fix that. He's got to maybe tease more than he does. But he had a turnaround game, a nice bounce back game in the opening win last week for VMI, the series opening win with Western Carolina. The final score was 11-7. You'd say that doesn't sound like much. You know, guy was a winning pitcher in an 11-7 win. And he gave up three runs in the first inning, gave up a three-run homer, gave up a solo homer in the second. So he threw two innings, two home runs and four runs allowed. Ends up going eight innings, just those four runs allowed, seven hits, 11 strikeouts, one walk. He threw 123 pitches. I was a little uncomfortable with 123 pitches, but even in the eighth inning, as his pitch count was up there, he was still hitting 95 on the gun. And the scouts, there were a number of scouts. Our broadcast pictured it well, and I even mentioned it during the broadcast. The number of scouts behind home plate when Winder was out there pitching, holding their radar guns up. I don't think I've seen that in quite a while. I've experienced in Valley League baseball. I was a play-by-play announcer for the Waynesburg Journals in the Valley League for several years. We had a lot of scouts at games there. I never saw the number of scouts I saw at any of those games that I saw at Winder's game on Friday night. And so nice bounce back. First SoCon win of the season for Winder. And that puts the rest of the league on notice. Because, hey, you know, the VMI is doing what it's doing, 7-5 in SoCon play, despite the fact that Winder did not have a win until last week, right? So if Winder can get things untracked and turn Friday night for VMI back into, you know, the almost automatic win that it should be when you have a pitcher as dominant as Winder on the mound, then you at that stage, you're playing Saturday and Sunday. You split those, you win your series, and the more VMI wins games, the you know, the more you have to like them in the SoCon tournament. And, you know, you're only going to get him once if you're VMI in that SoCon tournament down at Floor Field in Greenville in May. But if he's going to give you a win, then that's one of the three or four you need to get to the NCAA tournament. And I tell you what, I wouldn't want – if, you know, the pitcher I saw Friday night, I wouldn't want to be a one seed somewhere because the way the NCAA tournament does this, by and large – teams, especially the four seeds, will play somewhere regionally. I wouldn't want to be an ACC or SEC school with VMI as my four seed and Josh Winder pitching. You know, I know that what a lot of one seeds will do in a home regional, they won't pitch their number one guy against the number four seed. They'll save that one guy for the Saturday game to you know, theoretically pitch against the winner of the 2-3. You know, you might put your two or your three starter out there in that opening game. I wouldn't want to do that against a VMI team with a guy like Winder. I tell you what. So, you know, this Winder, I think, you know, he's again, mechanically, everything else, he's been solid all season long. Just the results weren't quite there. He'd have a bad few pitches, a bad inning here and there, and that's why the ERA is elevated. That's why the win total is not where it needs to be. But, you know, I think what we saw this past Friday night, the win over Western Carolina is the start of something for Winder as this season tracks down. And it'll be interesting to see. We got him again Friday night. 6 o'clock, first pitch on ESPN. We're back on ESPN3, so you can use the Watch ESPN app. Watch it on the phone, watch it on your iPad, watch it on the TV if you have a Roku or Amazon Fire Stick, Google Play, whatever device you use. And Saturday, then, I think we're scheduled for 2 o'clock, Sunday, 1 o'clock, assuming the schedule holds. So among the other players you'll see, if you've not seen this this year, seen any of our broadcasts this year, and we've still got those three coming up. We've got the Virginia Tech game coming up. That's midweek next week. ACC foe coming into Gray Minor Stadium. That's Wednesday night, a 6 o'clock start. And then we have one last series in May, and I don't have that. The team right in front of me, but we have one last three-game series in May, so still some baseball coming up for us on Watch ESPN and the ESPN3 and the app and everything else. Other players that you'll want to pay attention to, Matt Pita, and there's a few, so I'm going through. There's a long list. I'm probably going to leave some guys out here on this podcast. But Matt Pita is a guy that, you know, you're going to want to pay attention to. Matt Pita is a special. He's a right fielder, the right fielder for VMI, and he does everything. And I can't believe this kid's not going to, not have some name call at some point pretty soon in terms of major league draft potential. This kid can do it all on the diamond. Defensively, he's a stalwart. But offensively, he can do a little bit of everything. Pita is a 5'10", 175-pound junior. He's from the Richmond area and went to Cosby High School. And what Pita can do, he's hitting .392, second in the league. .723 slugging percentage, first in the league. He leads the SoCon in extra base hits. He's got 16 doubles, which is first. He's got 3 triples, fifth in the league. 9 homers, second in the league. But he all at .471 on base percentage. He's very careful at the plate. But also, he when he's on the base pass, 20 stolen bases, third in the league. So what you see a lot with guys like Pita, he reminds me a little bit, at least of his impact in the VMI lineup is reminiscent to me. I also watch a lot of Washington Nationals baseball. He reminds me of a lot of Bryce Harper. He's the kind of guy that opposing pitching staffs scheme to pitch around as much as possible. If there's nobody on base, they're very careful with him. And Pita is disciplined enough to plate that he'll take the walk. Because with the stolen base numbers he puts up, a walk can be a double. I mean, the guy is that fast. He had 6 stolen bases in a game earlier this year. I think it was back early in April in a win for VMI. He can be damaging with his legs on the base pads. At the plate, he's so disciplined. And where VMI uses him, and it's interesting, and you see more teams doing this in this day and age, you know, guys with power numbers like this hitting second didn't used to be the case. The old book on baseball was you put a speed guy in your leadoff spot, you know, your number two guy is a hit-and-run guy, and then you go 3, 4, 5 with your big boppers. Pita's the biggest bopper in the league, but he hits second in this lineup behind Nathan Eaton. And I'll talk about Nathan Eaton in a second, but Eaton is also – he's first in the SoCon in stolen bases this year and a very patient hitter at the plate. Batting average – that belies his impact on the lineup. Eaton, I'm flipping through my papers here, and I thought I had it written down here. Eaton hitting in the 260s, but on base, yeah, 263 batting average, but an on base percentage of .408 because of his patience at the plate. And so, as the better Eaton does, then it makes it harder for teams to pitch around Pita. Those two guys at the top of the lineup are that's a dangerous one too. And then now the middle of the order is starting to get refreshed and refurbished and everything else. And so that makes Pita even more dangerous. And I've just not seen a guy that can do the things he can do in a lineup as consistently as he does. And, again, he's you pitch around him. And Bryce Harper, not quite as much at the big league level. Harper can steal bases. He just doesn't do a lot of it. More like Mike Trout almost. You know, Trout, the Los Angeles Angels outfielder is a guy who makes you pay in a similar way in terms of if you put him on base with the free pass, then he's a risk to extend it with the stolen base. And so it is fun seeing this lineup, and Matt Pita really is the linchpin of this lineup. We'll go ahead and skip ahead to Eaton. You know, I talked about the leadoff man. He's hit leadoff all season long. He's got 5 home runs out of the leadoff spot, so Eaton has some pop. And 25 of 28 in the stolen base department, including one last week. I had never seen before, at least I'd never seen it live, only seen on replay, a straight steal of home. When I say a straight steal of home, you know, you'll see people credited with stealing home on the back end of a double steal with runners on first and third. A guy at first, the throw goes through, and a guy steals home. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Nathan Eaton in the 11-9 loss to Longwood last week. He had the pitcher measured. It was a right-handed pitcher for Longwood. And the relief pitcher was going out of the windup with a runner on third base and 2 outs in the inning. Actually, Matt Pita was at the plate. And there was a 2-0 pitch in that at-bat, and Eaton had he had him measured. I even pointed it out. You know, looking at it live, Eaton was halfway down the line on the 2-0 pitch Pita was taking. And I remarked on the broadcast, wow, I've not seen a guy that far down the third baseline on a pitch, right-handed pitcher facing him, coming out of the windup, and Pita took the called strike, and a couple pitches later in the at-bat, it was a 2-2 count, in fact, in the at-bat. Eaton stole home, and it just slid under the tag. There was an argument from the Longwood head coach about the call, because there were two elements at play. It was a pitch. Pita took the pitch. Pitch was a ball, so there was no strikeout. Of course, strikeout would have ended the inning before the attempt to steal a home. And replay showed that Eaton was clearly safe. And, you know, we talk a lot about what the most exciting play in sports is. You know, there's the kickoff return for a touchdown or alley-oop dunk or whatever the case may be. We'll talk about the triple, the inside-the-park home run, which we saw actually Matt Pita had an inside-the-park home run this weekend. That was very exciting. Nothing approaches the straight steal of home. Nothing approaches the successful straight steal of home. I've now seen it in my lifetime. I was even the play-by-play announcer for the ninth-inning walk-off hit for a championship in the Valley League, Waynesboro winning in 2014. I was the play-by-play guy with the call of a walk-off for a championship. This was more exciting than that. So Eaton bringing us that excitement. And then something else I thought I'd not see. So Eaton plays second base and third base for this VMI team. Very flexible. It gives the ability to VMI coach Jonathan Hadra to move around his lineup as he sees fit and needs to get guys in the lineup, get their at-bats and that kind of thing. I'd seen that Eaton had pitched this year, but I'd not seen him myself with my own two eyes pitch. He comes out of the bullpen. You see his numbers. I'm reading the numbers on the off the screen. He's, you know, 14 strikeouts in 13 and a third innings. He has a problem with walks, 11 walks in 13 and a third, but opponents hitting 178 against him. And I'm saying, okay, so those numbers tell me, I'm thinking in my head as I'm watching him warm up, hey, those numbers tell me he's got a, you know, plus fastball and he's got some control issues, but he'll probably be fun to watch. I'm expecting a fastball around 90, 91 miles an hour. First pitch comes out of his hand, the guns say 97. And I say out on the broadcast, Wade Brander, the play-by-play guy that I work with, SID at VMI, 97, Wade. I think Wade actually thought, too, I wonder if our guns are off. Second fastball, 97. Third fastball, 95. Wow. Those numbers jump out at you, to say the least, right? Now, he does have the control issue, and that will be something that he'll have to work on. But, you know, you can't teach. I say this a lot. I say this on the broadcast. You can't teach 97. Now, Eaton's a redshirt sophomore, so theoretically draft eligible this year as well. You know, he can play the two positions in the infield. I would imagine he could play anywhere he needs to. The kid's very, very, very flexible defensively. He puts good numbers up offensively. But I would imagine that, you know, those fastballs at 97, again, you can't teach it. If you're a major league baseball team, you got your instructors in minor league camps, you know, you can corral 97. You can make it work. You can work with the young man and get him to get it in the zone more. One thing I noticed last week, he had a two inning save in, I think it was game two of our series, game one of our doubleheader on Saturday. And, you know, he can throw at 97, but sometimes he was overthrowing it. Even for a guy who throws that hard, he had issues. Sometimes I think there was confidence issues. Like, you know, maybe I need to throw this one 115 miles an hour instead of just 97. Got a nice slider, an overhand curveball that was unfair, a couple of strikeouts on. You know, when you're expecting a fastball in the mid-90s and you see a curveball at 80 come out of that same arm slot, that's the definition of filthy. Sometimes I think we overuse terms like that. It's just inside baseball kind of thing, but that is filthy. That's just, you know, you're standing up there. It's just not fair. It's not fair. So I would take a rider. You know, I would take a rider on him. And, you know, Eaton will play somewhere for me, I'm thinking, as I'm drafting and putting together my draft board. So pay attention. I want to see more of him. And, you know, it's the hard part is, I mean, he's a redshirt sophomore, so he's draft eligible this year. Then he's also draft eligible next year and then before a potential senior season. So, you know, I know from VMI's selfish perspective, we'd love to see him back for at least one more year. Then he gets his degree and still has potentially one more year to contribute to the program. But I think for his sake as well, I think he's definitely got pro potential and is someone definitely to watch on this VMI team. One other person I'd mention, Colin Fleischer. Fleischer last year, 17 home runs, one of the better seasons in VMI and SoCon history. 17 home runs, 48 RBIs, big first baseman, left fielder for the Keydets. And when we started doing our broadcast late last month, as I'm transitioning from my work covering college basketball to now broadcasting college baseball, I noticed that Fleischer was struggling, to say the least. He was hitting in the low 200s. He had not homered yet this year. A guy at 17 home runs last year had not homered yet this year. And, wanted to know what was up. And quietly, it was mentioned to me, we're not really talking about this much publicly, but he had some issues with his back in the offseason, and he's still struggling. And to Fleischer's credit, he's been out there in the lineup. I mean, you have some guys who they have an injury issue, they don't play. The team's played 35 games. He's played 29 games. He's only missed 6 games. But April 1st, he had his come out game, if you want to say. 3-for-4, home run, 2 runs batted in. And he also had one of the RBI was a sac fly that was to the, in fact, it was a first inning sac fly. I think it was first inning sac fly in that win. That went to the center field fence, and I noted during the broadcast, hey, maybe that's the kind of swing and the kind of result that can be something to build on. He had a couple of, had a single later in that game, then the home run late that, you felt like, man, maybe he's starting to turn around. Well, he has. After not homering in the months of February and March this year, the month of April, hitting the quick math on this, let's see if I can do some real quick math. As we're talking here on the podcast, he's 16-for-38 at the plate, which I know is over 400, but I'm going to just do the quick 421 in the month of April, 16-for-38, 4 home runs, 9 runs batted in, and in his last 6 games, those numbers have improved even more dramatically. 11-for-21 at the plate, which is, I know it's over 500, it's 524 batting average, 3 home runs, 7 RBIs. This past weekend, 2-for-3, a home run, and 2 runs batted in the Friday night win, 11-7 win over Western Carolina. Then in game 1 of the doubleheader, 3-for-4, another home run, 3 more runs batted in the 12-9 win over Western Carolina. 0-for-2 in the nightcap with a couple of walks. But that's the kind of thing that happens too. He's moved up in the lineup now. He had been hitting 7th and 8th in the lineup. Now Coach Jonathan Hager has been able to switch some things around. And the lineup now has Fleischer hitting 5th. So you got Eaton and Pita at the top. Both guys over 20 stolen bases. Pita with all those great numbers, hitting close to 400 in the season, second in the league in home runs. Then in the third slot, you've got Jacob Jay. Jay's been there the whole season long in that third slot. 29 runs batted in, which should be 3rd on the team. I'm making sure. Yeah, 2nd on the team. Tapita's 36, and Jay also is a guy. He's hitting 242, but he leads the SoCon in walks with 34. So an on-base percentage, even with that 242 batting average, an on-base percentage just shy of 400, hitting a 398 on OBP. Then in the 4th slot, actually, Will Malbin's moved up. Malbin hit 349 in 18 games last year, got injured, missed the season, got a medical redshirt. He's back this year, hitting 297 for this VMI team, 5 home runs in the 4th slot behind Jay. Behind Pita, you got Fleischer now, whose average has gone up. When we started broadcasting games back in late March, Fleischer was hitting 202. Now with that torrid stretch in April, his average all the way up to 288. Then you still got Peyton Mannix, the catcher, hitting 294. He's actually hitting 7th a lot in this lineup. Matt Dunleavy's usually hitting 6th in this lineup. 322 batting average, 2nd on the team, 4 homers. He's also got 8 stolen bases in 10 attempts, 25 walks. This VMI team, this is one thing you'll see about this team when you start watching us, assuming that you'll start hopefully soon. This is a team that takes a lot of pitches. They're a very patient team, an approach that very very reminiscent of some major league teams. Among the league leaders in the team as a whole by far leads the SoCon in bases on balls, light years ahead of the rest of the league. But then the individual guys, I mentioned Jay leads the SoCon in walks. Eaton is second in the SoCon in walks. Dunleavy is somewhere in the top five or six himself. And so these guys take a lot of pitches. They work as a result. They work the opponent's pitching staffs into submission. You know, a good friend of mine that I learned a lot of baseball from, former assistant coach with the Waynesboro Generals a few years ago, would always tell me, Robert Nordoff would always tell me, you know, when the strategy for an offense in a three-game weekend series, Robert used to coach at New Mexico State. He was a hitting coach there, defensive coach there. And he'd say, here's our approach to winning a three-game series. Friday night, our stud. He's our stud for a reason. He's going to win Friday night. We're going to make the opposing pitcher throw 15 pitches every inning. Even if we don't score, even if we go down 1-2-3, if we make him work and get 15 pitches out of him an inning, he's going to be gone by the sixth, maybe the seventh inning. We're into their bullpen early. So our stud wins the game Friday night. We're into their bullpen. Saturday, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to take at least 15 pitches an inning. Adds up over the course of a game. By Sunday, their pitching staff is gassed. And we win on Sunday by attrition. So even if they win Saturday, we've won Friday because we've got a stud. We win Sunday because we've worked their pitching staff to death. And that's how we win ball games. Well, now here's what happened this past weekend. And I got to pull these numbers up just to illustrate. I want to get these numbers exactly right. I had them on the broadcast, and I just want to make sure I got it. So the game one of the doubleheader, we played a double. In fact, we only played seven innings in game two, so I'll point that out before we get there. Western Carolina in game one threw 181 pitches in that game. So that's 20 pitches in an inning. In fact, VMI didn't even bat in the bottom of the ninth, so more than 20 pitches per inning. Game two, now again, remind you that that was only a seven-inning game, and VMI only batted six times in that game. 128 pitches. Again, over 20 pitches an inning. That's something you see all the time from this VMI team. They you know, very disciplined, very few one or two pitch outs in at-bats. As a result, you know, you see the results for this VMI team offensively. 274 batting average, fourth in the league, but a 395 on-base percentage, second in the league. I mentioned that, you know, the 208 walks is by far first in the league. 37 home runs, second in the league. 69 stolen bases, second in the league. So it's a VMI team that can put runs on the board. If the pitching starts coming around, if you start seeing Winder doing his thing, which I really think that the Friday night game was a turnaround game for Winder. You know, I like Zach Kent. He's the Saturday starter, has been the Saturday starter. Got in a little trouble in game one of our doubleheader on Saturday. He had four scoreless two-hit innings to open that game. Had a 6-0 lead. Couldn't get out of the fifth. Just, you know, the third time from the lineup, had some trouble. 4.89 ERA on the season, though, 3-3 record. And nice power numbers, too. 53 strikeouts in 49 innings, 18 walks. I think Kent can put it together. He's got to get that third time through thing figured out, but I think he can put it together. Kyle Stats, 4-2 record as a Sunday starter, 5.23 ERAs, worked his way up. He was a situational lefty reliever his first three seasons at VMI. He's emerged now as your Sunday starter. And I mentioned Brandon Barbary. His ERA doesn't jump out at you, 6.35, 2-2 record, but he took that shutout in the ninth inning last week in the win over VCU. He's someone you can rely upon for this team. And so there are guys. Matt Eagle at the back of the bullpen. He's got six saves in the season, 4.88 ERA. Looked really confident closing out. It was game three of the series, game two of our doubleheader on Saturday. And again, nice power numbers, power and control numbers. 34 strikeouts, 5 walks in 27 2/3 innings. So they got some arms. They've got lots of bats. And I think this VMI team can do something special. So we'll have to see. Again, our broadcast this weekend, now the VMI on the road Wednesday at Richmond. We won't have that game for you, but we will have the weekend series for you with Furman. Furman VMI, we have a first pitch on Saturday shortly after 6 p.m., and then Saturday at 2, Sunday at 1, weather permitting. And I'm sure that the way the weather forecast is now, we're going to go with it being a three-game series in 3 days. So lots coming up as far as that goes. I'll be joining Wade Branner in the broadcast booth. Our great crew, Steve and Kareem, and all the great camera folks. I mean, I think they do a great job putting things together there. I've been so impressed. My third season doing it. The producer and director are there in the booth with us. So between pitches, I can sometimes hear their calls back and forth, and it's just fascinating to hear how they put this together. I'm really impressed with how VMI does the job it does working with ESPN to put these broadcasts on. Southern Conference baseball, it's not LSU, LSU Florida or whatever else it may. It's not Virginia, Florida State at the ACC level. But we put it on like it is. You know, we work like it is the College World Series, and it's a great crew. Love working with Wade, and hopefully that comes across in our broadcast. So hopefully you can tune in this weekend again. Friday 6, Saturday 2, Sunday 1, VMI Baseball as the Keydets host Furman in a very key series. VMI can get a series win here. They'll jump up the standings even further. Looking forward to bringing that action to you. So want to sign off for now. And once again, thank you for listening to our podcast. And we'll talk some more VMI baseball and a lot more on podcast this week and in the next few weeks. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.